Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
If you didn't have any information from the New Testament, if every New Testament, imagine this thought experiment where every New Testament had been successfully destroyed by some evil future regime.
J. Warner Wallace on Focus on the Family Minute.
So I don't have a single manuscript or a single Bible. They're all been destroyed. It turns out from just the fuse and fallout of history, you can reconstruct in its entirety the story of Jesus. You could be saved with the information you would just get from the fuse and fallout, so that even if every New Testament had been destroyed, this is the kind of impact that Jesus has. There's a reason why we call this the first century, even though,
guess what?
It's not the first century, okay?
Right.
There was a bunch of centuries before the first century, but we keep on calling it the first century because something explosive happened.
Hear more from J. Warner Wallace about the evidence for the Christian faith at familyminute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
The Rest of the Story. I want you to meet Mary Louise. She was born in Waco, Texas in 1884. Mary's daddy was a wholesale grocer. Both parents were Irish immigrants. By the age of 14, talented Mary Louise began studying voice in Chicago, subsequently became a traveling performer, city to city, stage companies, rodeos. 1904, she met and married a Denver newspaper man. The marriage would not last, nor would her second, nor would her third. For little Mary Louise had an eye on New York and the big time. Soon she became the woman you know, the bright, tough roustabout of nightclub stage and silent screen. Mary Louise Cecilia was Texas Guinan. But you don't yet know the rest of the story. Once on stage in New York City, Mary Guinan rose quickly from the ranks of the chorus. One good musical comedy role followed another better one. By 1908, Mary was on the vaudeville circuit, billed as the Gibson Girl, and there she belted ballads from a basket suspended above the audience. The year 1913 brought a successful review, The Passing Show. World War I took Mary behind the lines in France to entertain the troops. It was perhaps in silent films that Mary first hammered out the image of Texas Guinan, pictures like The Gun Woman and Little Miss Deputy. For the aggressive self-reliance Mary dramatized on screen forged the character of a new woman, brash and capable, ready and willing to meet the male world on its own terms. That was the role Texas Guinan carried into the nightclubs and the lounges and the speakeasies of the era of prohibition. She became the lusty performer hostess, a white hot neon doll glowing through a stale haze of cigar smoke, a husky dusky reflection in a pool of illegal booze. Texas Guinan. Her trade, trading insults. Her greeting, hello sucker. The El Fay Club opened in 1924. Texas Guinan perched atop a tall stool, jibing with the socialites and the racketeers. They were her court, her reign, her throne, her subjects. The El Fay raided, closed. The Del Fay opened two blocks away. The Texas Guinan Club, the 300 Club, the Club in Time, Texas Guinan's Salon Royale, each in succession, an itinerant kingdom uprooted at the shriek of a police whistle. Give the little girl a big hand, and they gave her a hand. Today would be the 100th anniversary of the birth of a newsman, Lowell Thomas, who remembered another Texas Guinan from many years before. A young woman named Mary. That's right, in Anaconda, Montana, when Lowell Thomas was 12, he had a crush on a vivacious blonde named Mary Guinan. Lowell never told his parents about the infatuation, but as the years rolled by, he watched that gleaming star from his childhood ascend and take its place in the midnight sky. For the little girl from Waco who rode the road shows to New York City, the brash blonde who bombarded the Big Apple belting ballads from a swinging basket, the speakeasy mistress of ceremonies who blazed a brazen trail across the Prohibition era, Texas Guinan, Lowell Thomas remembered as his school teacher. As his Sunday school teacher. And now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Slow Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on the right choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veely. I'm your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. Tomorrow we are going to have Debbie Peterson on the show. She is pushing through a number of measures that are going to be supposed to be on the ballot this year. One of them in Grover Beach is to hire a clerk or to elect a clerk recorder. They've agreed to put that one on. The other one they signed up enough voters for. Now the state is trying to fight and the city is trying to fight it going on the ballot. I will have her on Thursday.
I'm not sure the state is trying to fight it.
Something came out, a state statement came out, didn't it?
Well, yes, it did. But this is the No Tall Buildings initiative, yes, that the people of Grover Beach put on the ballot over the objections of most of the city council that wanted to have be able to permit tall buildings right down by the beach when their local coastal plan and all of their and other planning had limited the height of buildings there so that the view would be preserved. But what the state said is, well, if that happens, then the city of Grover Beach, to meet its allocation for new housing that has been set by SLOCOG, there's regional allocations of housing for every city and every community so that we can have more housing to hopefully lower the cost of housing and get people off the streets. But what the city said was what the state said was the city would have to allow more housing in other parts of Grover Beach. And so it's not the state saying that the initiative should not pass. It's the state saying that the city council and the city planning department are going to have to increase housing in other parts of Grover Beach, which there's plenty of places to do that.
I was told that something just came down in the last few days from the housing authority. Is this what you were aware of?
This is the letter that came from the state housing authority. I'm not sure that's the right title, but basically that's the letter. And some of the opponents and the developers who want to build the tall buildings right down by the beach, because that's where they can make real big money, they're saying that the state said that somehow the city's going to violate the law if they're not allowed to build down there. And the state didn't say that. The state did say, if this passes, it's going to require that other development be allowed in other parts of the city in order to increase the housing up to the limits that have been set by SLOCOG. SLOCOG does two things. They build roads and bridges, and they set the housing allocations, oddly enough. But the we have all seen politicians spin one little fact into a whole lot more, and that's,
yes,
what's going on there.
You saw this in Paso Robles. When you had a group of people that wanted to stop the paid parking in the downtown area, then the city tried to say, oh, your initiative is bad. You made this mistake and that mistake. First of all, the initiative goes to the city clerk, who approves it to go get the signatures. You get the signatures and you bring it back. And then they go, wait a minute, we think this part doesn't work. when you're trying to get it on the ballot. So it is a kind of a fight. Then the city can always come out and say, we're going to agree to what you want, and you don't have to put it on the ballot.
Yes, but then if the city changes its mind later and wants to adopt something that the initiative forbid, they have to put it back on the ballot for people to approve. That's why cities are so anxious to keep, even if they effectively repeal what they've done without adopting the exact language of the initiative, then they can come back and try it again. So those are the kinds of resistances. You know, you talked about how manipulative people are in family law. When I sued the city of San Luis Obispo because of their mistreatment of the homeless in violation of the state constitution, the federal constitution, and the vehicle code, I realized litigants in city government were way more, in county government, if you were suing the city or the county, those people were way more manipulative than family law litigants.
But I have noticed you and Sorrow together did multiple suits against the city of Paso or San Luis Obispo, and I think you won every one of them.
Well, you know, we've had a pretty good track record.
You've had a very good track record. And what they've done is they've done this very often in support of people that can't afford to do it on their own. There are laws that protect people. And, for example, they wanted to have a law that you couldn't sleep in a car. And there was you have to have a sign up that you can't sleep in a car. You just can't do that. And I know personally, I'm driving somewhere and I get sleepy. I'll pull over in some city that it's not my destination, and close my eyes for a half an hour and head off. And if this had happened, you couldn't pull over and close your eyes for an hour.
There are those practical things. Now, let's talk about other practical things. We were talking about court reporters, but in California, you know, there's ever since Gideon versus Wainwright, that famous case where a guy got convicted of a misdemeanor in Georgia, he wrote out on yellow paper in handwriting his petition to the U.S. Supreme Court. And they said, well, wait a minute. The U.S. Constitution, which applies to the states through the 14th Amendment, gives a defendant in a criminal case a right to have counsel. And that means that if they can't afford a counsel, an attorney to represent them, there has to be an attorney, a public attorney, provided for them.
And I think it's massively important. I think the public defender is a very important thing in our criminal system.
Well, very, very important. If you think about it, General George Washington, when they were talking about the Constitution and even the Bill of Rights, said that it was important to have a defense. It was important to have a jury trial where you had to have a unanimous jury decide that you were guilty. And it was important to have a defense because it was better to let 12 guilty men go free than to have one innocent person convicted. Because what does that do to the innocent person? It makes them a criminal, ultimately. First of all, they're going to go to prison and learn from criminals. Second of all, they feel like they've been ripped off, and so it's very likely that they are going to turn to ripping off the society once they get out. So plus, you know, in our system of justice, we want to make sure that you or your neighbor aren't falsely accused and falsely convicted. So now in California is apparently one of the only states, there's only two left, that don't have government-run mandated public defender's offices. Most of them are actually administered by the state. California shoves it off to the counties. And there's only 15 counties left that have these flat fee contracts where there's a lawyer's office hired, but they're, it's a contract where they get a flat fee to handle all comers for the whole year. And so what's the incentive there to provide a vigorous defense? The other problem is that because...
And we're one of those?
We are one of the last. We are one of the last on the coast, as a matter of fact. And so what ends up happening is, I know when I was a young public defender, I told you earlier how I got fired. I got rehired 3 months later to be in municipal court and defend people, and I did jury trials there. And, in the juvenile cases, you know, I was pretty green, but I had a 66% win rate because I just decided I was going to try the cases if my client felt that they wanted a trial. And that had upset some of the judges too. But
because the push really is to most cases are don't go to court. They are they go to settlements.
I was talking to a public defender who's in the Superior Court these days, and she told me that in the last 6 years that she's been a public defender, she's never actually tried a case.
Wow.
And so the incentives are to try to get the best plea bargain. The other problem is that the district attorney's office, of course, has investigators, and they're funded by the county. Now, the DA has gone to the county board of supervisors and said, I need 5 new positions. You need to fund these. And they skunked him on that. But the reality is when they're issuing the contract to the public defender, to the private firm that's going to be the public defender, they try to get the cheapest, least expensive contract they can. And so the incentives are out of whack. It's, you know, I tried a lot of cases because I was young and I wanted to learn. But I left when I had 110 files under my arm, walking into court, and I realized I had 4.5 minutes for each client.
Yeah, that isn't helping your client.
You can't help someone if you only have 4.5 minutes for them, because our county's not as bad as some. Kings County's very, very bad. They've got one that they have individual attorneys who are hired to do individual courts. But one of them had 600 cases, and they're not going to try, you know, you can't even try those in a year.
How do you even remember them all?
There is that. So, those are, oh, by the way, 450 of those were felonies.
Well, what could be done? What is the answer here? What would you change?
There was a prosecutor from, Southern California, at Burbank, and he is now in the state assembly, and he authored a bill last year, Assembly Bill 690. It passed the assembly, and it would essentially outlaw flat fee contracts by counties to defense attorneys. The contracts would have to be based on the number of hours and the number of cases dealt with. One of the other problems is there's not enough defenders, not enough lawyers defending, but there's not enough investigators for most public defenders' offices, because you have to go out and get the facts and interview witnesses. And so that's one place where our county is middling, but it really would need a public defender's office with 2 or 3 more investigators to actually be able to do their job properly. There are, I understand you have to go to the head public defender contractor and ask for an investigator, justify it before you can even try to go out and gather information to defend your clients in this county.
And can they at times, let's say they don't have enough, you have so many clients, you can't get to them, you need some investigators, can they go out and pay for, I've seen that we have private investigators that charge quite a bit. Is there a way to get one of those to work on a case for a,
well,
a public defender case?
You know, technically there is, but that would come out of the pocket of the deputy public defender, who's also getting a flat fee for all the comers in the particular court that they've been assigned to. Back in the day when I was talking about that judge who said you got to get a record if you're gonna go challenge the judge for doing something unethical. I did call in the court reporter, but if I was going to go to the Court of Appeal, I was making $1,250 a month. And so it was a disincentive, but I just looked at myself in the mirror and said, well, yeah, I guess I could do that.
And there are, you know, it's very important that people have good court reporters. There's a lot of times when people are guilty. I mean, there's a lot of times, but there's also a lot of times when they're not guilty.
Or they're not guilty of what they're charged with.
And there's overcharging, and there are issues. There's some great people in law enforcement, but I don't care what group you are. You have some people that do things they shouldn't.
There are fine public defenders in this county and in every county. There's fine prosecutors. There are also folks who just give in to the incentives that are set up by whatever system they're in, instead of being as vigorous as they might otherwise be. But that's all important. If people want to know about Assembly Bill 690, they can go to the legislative's website. They can look at it. It's stuck in the state Senate.
We're going to take a break, a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with more with Stu Jenkins.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report. Stocks losing steam heading into the closing bell, with the major averages ending mixed following a cooling CPI inflation report. The tech-heavy Nasdaq gained as AI stocks rallied. Inflation declining slightly last month as the cost of gas and groceries fell, though prices still rose more quickly than before the Iranian war. Consumer prices increasing 3.4% in July from a year ago. AI infrastructure stocks surged on strong earnings reports, but software stocks fell on AI disruption worries. CoreWeave stock rose 20%. The cloud computing company reported a smaller loss and higher revenue than analysts were expecting for the second quarter. The Dow winners, Caterpillar, NVIDIA, and Honeywell Technologies. The Dow decliners, Home Depot, Microsoft, and Travelers. The Dow down 22 points. The Nasdaq higher by 143. S&P 500 up 20. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
You're probably listening to this in your car, so let me ask you. Would you drive without insurance? Of course not. So why is your retirement portfolio unprotected? Gold is portfolio insurance. It helps de-risk your savings when markets get unpredictable. Noble Gold Investments has helped thousands of Americans do exactly that, with no high-pressure sales and thousands of five-star reviews. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com. Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals involves risk. Consult with your tax or financial professional before making any investment decisions.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
With the high utility costs we've been experiencing, now's the time to consider the efficient, energy-saving evaporative coolers and dial cooler parts now in stock at Blake's Incorporated. Blake's has a large selection of efficient, cost-cutting roof mount or window mount evaporative coolers and dial cooler parts. Want to save on your monthly electric bill? Blake's True Value has an evaporative cooler model that will fit your needs. Help is just around the corner at Blake's Incorporated, your True Value Hardware Center, 17th and Riverside, Paso Robles.
Do you worry about where to take your car for repairs? Who you can trust? Mike and his team at the Autobahn are a safe bet. Located in Templeton, behind the donut shop, just off Main Street. They service Mercedes, BMWs, Volkswagens, Porsches, and Audis. And the Autobahn is certified in those cars and in repairing Land Rovers, Volvos, and Mini Coopers. Call the Autobahn, 434-2200.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vili, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. And last week, I had Gaia Powell on the show. And for those that are unaware of what's going on, Gaia Powell is a person that ran for a mayor in Arroyo Grande in 2022 and 2024, and then was accused of violating multiple election laws. She has multiple, I think she has 7 or 9 felonies against her regarding that she said she wasn't going to raise money. She did. There were a number of things they accused her of, but one of the main thing was that she claimed that she was living in the city of Arroyo Grande, and the allegation was she didn't live in the city of Arroyo Grande. She lived in the county near Arroyo Grande. During the preliminary hearing, the lady that she has lived rented from a home from for, she lives in a ADU behind her home, claimed that she told her, "You can't run for mayor. I used to be a city council person or a supervisor, and you can't do this." And she testified that Gaia had told her, the laws have changed, you can now do it. Then the person that she was renting from, she said, "We had a lease agreement for me to live there." And the guy said, "No, I told her," she asked me if she could use part of a condo I had to run her campaign out of, and I said yes, but I did not tell her that we had an agreement that she could live there. She claims that she planned on moving back and that other people have been allowed to do that. And she brought up one, for those that don't remember, there was a California Valley case where someone turned one of the people in there and they were charged with not living there when they ran. In the end, it was determined that that person had moved a trailer, bought some land, moved a trailer onto it, was trying to get it ready to live in as a primary residence, or they had been living there, but then they started staying in Paso where they got things done, and the judge says, no, they're returning there, that's going to be their home, and they do stay there at times. It was all ruled that it was okay. But anyway, as we know, Gaia Powell says she was planning on buying that place and living there, and it would have been her home. And as such, she is also allowed to, that the charges against her are false. And then remember, she was on last week, and she said, transparency, they're required to give these records. So she tried to get certain records regarding the investigation against her through the criminal case, and the judge said no. So then she filed a records request for not only her case, she wanted all records, emails between the county council and Elena Cano. She wanted all records from investigators or anyone at the DA's office between Elena Cano and her that mentioned herself and the investigation. And then she also wanted any emails regarding any other people that ran in those years, and she wanted all things that mention Michelle Morrow or Hunter Brees and questions about their voting and that cases. So she asked for quite a bit. They said there was actually 70 emails altogether with everything she was looking for. But when she was on the air and she said there's 70 emails about this, it wasn't about her case. There were, I think, 13 or 15 emails that mentioned her case. They gave, the judge then said, can you give me a list, like a registry of all the cases? They sent over all the emails and sent over this many for Morrow, this many for Hunter Breeze, and this many for Powell. And then they actually gave the judge the Powell emails, which were just nothing. And then they actually ended up in Powell's hand, but she wanted quite a bit more. The judge ruled yesterday, these are exempt. There are exemptions to this. You do not get to see investigative emails. She has no right to the emails. This is not a public. She says this is transparency and she should get these records under the Public Records Act and that anybody should be able to see all records of all investigations. That is not, the Public Records Act does not allow you to see those records. The judge rules she does not have a right to see the records. She lost the case. There was a ruling made yesterday. Now, I was going to ask Stu to talk about this. He told me he cannot. I'm not going to ask him to explain. I understand. If any parties have called you and asked for information, as an attorney, Stu cannot discuss those specific cases. I can't ask him to specifically discuss Elena Kano, but I can ask him to discuss another case. Back in the 80s, can you tell us about the case at Port San Luis? You were not only an attorney, you were on the board of the Port San Luis Harbor District. What happened?
Well, and I think this has a lot to do with the overall issues you're focused on right now. You know, in our American representative government, what makes it representative is that we elect people from among us to go sit on boards or commissions or state legislatures, city councils. And a lot of that has been based on districts over time. Now, that means that you have to live in the city where you're running for council, for instance. You have to live in the district in a county if you're running for supervisor for that district. You have to... Now, the Port San Luis Harbor District is actually the largest special district in the county. It goes from the Santa Maria River to the top of the Cuesta Grade, just east of the city of San Luis Obispo. And at the time it was formed, it included all of the city of San Luis Obispo. It includes Diablo Canyon, which is a major funding source for tax purposes.
It's one of the largest districts in this county, or it is the largest, isn't it?
It has about two-thirds of the population of the county in it. And since I was on it, in those days we all were elected at large. The first time I was elected, there was another vacant seat, and there was a young man who was elected to it. That seat.
What was his name?
His name was John Carter, and I understand he's passed some time ago. But anyhow, he introduced himself. He seemed real friendly, but he also introduced himself as the vice president of his daddy's oil field construction company. And when he got on, there was something going on that in the background none of us knew about. The other folks, at least I didn't know about it, was that the oil companies were going to start leasing off of our coast, and they were going to need a port, an industrial port, to service and build the derricks out there.
So this guy had a reason for wanting on that board, is what you're saying.
Well, he did seem to have that motive. And, you know, I'm a Welshman, and... you know, the Welsh commandments are very simple. And, you know, the first one is thou shalt not lie. And I got lied to three times, and I thought, who is this guy? So I started looking into him, and it turned out that he had registered to vote at a vacant lot in a mobile home park, and that his prior registration and his kids and his wife were all out in Shandon, way past the Cuesta Grade. And so I gathered some evidence, and I provided that to the district attorney's investigator's office. And the district attorney at the time, who also has passed now, may have been a very fine district attorney on other levels, but he decided it was just because it was a, when I looked at the statute, it looked to me like it was felony vote fraud to register at a place you didn't live at, and then
it was a vacant lot.
It was a vacant lot. And the way that I, some of the other evidence I got was a statement from the fellow who manned the gate at this mobile home park, who related that my fellow member of the commission had finally hauled a mobile home onto the vacant lot 6 or 8 months after he was in office, saying that I just can't, you know, our meetings are going till 1 and 2 in the morning. I can't drive all the way back to Shandon. and that was kind of a tip.
So it was a bit late to start having a place to stay there.
it was a bit late. And anyhow, it turned out that I haven't found that this statute still exists, but turned out it was a misdemeanor for a district attorney not to prosecute a felony. And so somehow I got a hold of the whole investigative file, and I sent that up to the Attorney General's office, to their public integrity unit.
Wow, so you went all the way.
Well, you know, and here I was the first Democrat on the Harbor Commission, I think, since it formed. And the Attorney General was a good Republican, but this was vote fraud, and they must have had some discussions, because I got a call from the Attorney General's office a few weeks later, and he said, well, we've had some discussions with your district attorney, and he is going to prosecute it, so we're not going to step in, but he's going to prosecute it. And he turned it over to a brand new deputy who had just come to town, and told her to deal it down to, say, disturbing the peace, is what I was told. And but when she saw the way it had come together and what the evidence was, she took it to trial. He was convicted of 12 jurors, good and true. And that night he went out and resigned.
So he waited till he was convicted to resign?
Yes, that's right. And in the meantime, we had Exxon Mobil coming in and asking for use of our piers. The other tip off was I researched down in the Gulf of Mexico, where there's a lot of oil, and talked to a lot of harbor masters. And one of them said to me, well, now, you know, we charge $35 for fishermen to come up to the pier in those days. And this harbor master said, well, now, these are big boats. You know, they're 150 feet long, and they're metal, and they're going to tear up your pier. If you don't get at least $2,500 or $3,000 a month, you're not even going to be able to maintain your pier.
Wow.
So I related that at our meetings, and this gentleman just went off the deep end, claiming that I wanted to discriminate against oil men. I just wanted to make sure our peers didn't get beat up.
Well, if the damage and the rules are, if it's that hard, you are going to need a different peer.
And it just tipped off what his motivations were. You know. But this is the problem people get. They think that if they're really clever, they can manipulate the rules in order to get into a position where they can make decisions in a perhaps a district they don't live in.
Yes. And a lot of people think they can manipulate the rules. They can manipulate the rules. They can do things. They can play games.
Now there's important aspects to this. So it's not just the fact, the law, it's the facts. Because the law is about registering to vote at your domicile. Domicile is an old English word, and we're going to get into that after this break, I bet.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more with Stu Jenkins.
We have a beautiful new furniture store in Paso Robles, right next to Walmart, Ricky's Furniture Outlet. Locally owned by fifth generation Californian, Ricky's offers a large variety of furniture, Western art pieces, and specializes in custom sofas. Ricky's bright, beautiful showroom is a breath of fresh air here in the North County. Ricky's Furniture Outlet, on Niblick, next to Walmart, in Paso Robles.
Hi, this is Dylan with Limp Patrol. We specialize in professional dryer vent cleaning and appliance preventative maintenance. If your clothes are taking longer to dry, your dryer could be warning you about a hidden fire hazard. Limp Patrol is here to help keep your home safe, improve appliance performance, and even lower your energy bills. Regular maintenance can help your appliances last longer and keep your home running efficiently. Don't overwork your dryer or let hidden lint start a fire. Call Limp Patrol today for a free estimate at 805-975-5176 or visit limppatrolca.com.
The Red Scooter Deli with two locations downtown and on 6th Street in Paso Robles. The downtown location on Pine Street is open 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursdays now for concerts in the park. Plan your musical enjoyment with a to-go dinner from the downtown Red Scooter Deli. Red Scooter Deli has beer, wine, and mimosas. Ask for the 15% off KPRL discount. Great deli fresh food delivered throughout Paso Robles, Templeton, the airport area, and wineries. Go to redscooterdeli.com.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealey. We're having one last segment with attorney Stu Jenkins. And one of the things I will say, Stu Jenkins has been my attorney before, and he helped me when I had some harassment once. You helped me with a, what was that case? I mean, you did win that one too. I had a restraining order against a young man. I didn't get a full one because they said it hadn't been, the bad stuff had all been months earlier. But anyway, I wanted to tell people that we had that. So the domicile is the rule under California law. You have to have the domicile there.
Well, let's just think about the ancient way that domicile has been defined in English and American history. It's the place where you go to live and intend to remain. And if you leave it, you intend to return.
And we're going to take a caller, and we'll get back to the domicile. Welcome to Sound Off. What would you like to ask Stu today?
Hey, Stu. This is Dale.
Dale, Capsule, how are you?
Capsule had a run-in with us at the senior center. Have you ever had any dealings with Capsule?
Well, indirectly, I defended a fine investigator against a libel action brought by D. Torres, who was at the time an officer at Cap Slow.
They're still a bad outfit, but the city asked for contracts on the senior centers, and Cap Slow was the only one. And they told the city where they were going to keep the personnel. Well, Mickey out there had been there a long time, and she thought she had the job. Capslow, they they decided it wasn't in the contract. It's keeping the people. And, oh, man, they angered all the seniors out there at the senior center, no big time. And so I went into the meeting of the advisory committee, and I said, you know, when Capsule got the contract, they promised the city they were going to keep the personnel. My question is, what happened to Mickey? You know, the only answer they got from this arrogant guy from Capsule, and I'm not characterizing, other people characterizing that way, was we're fully satisfied with how we staffed the senior center. And now I had a run-in with him about a tenant one time.
Well, I don't think we want to get into those specific cases, do we,
Dale? No, we don't. But this has irritated a lot of people in Paso Robles that they broke a promise.
Well, so, I can understand, you know, that's what law's all about, is promises and obligations and complying with them.
And Capsule was one of those companies that before DeTorres and Adam Hill started dating, DeCapsula was bringing in, I can't remember, something like $25 million a year in mostly government grant money. After DeTorres began dating a county supervisor, it went up to around $50 million over about 6 years. And the amount of money and the amount of things that Capsula was then doing through government agencies became huge. And as we know, the feds right now are really saying there needs to be a big look on nonprofits and how they're what's going on with grant money from government agencies.
Well, Dale, thanks for your question.
Thank you. I'm glad you're still practicing. Keep up the good work.
You're welcome, Dale.
Okay.
And there are a lot. The big issue right now is that what are the nonprofits? There's so much grant money and so little oversight. And there is a push right now in the federal government to push more oversight of nonprofits. But let's get back to the occupancy issue, the domicile issue.
Well, domicile is all about facts and intentions. And so I think you pulled this up from AI, I guess.
No, that's actually from the law.
Doesn't have a reference, but Election Code 349A talks about residency. B talks about domicile, and it is that place in which his or her habitation is fixed, wherein the person has the intention of remaining, and to which, whenever he or she is absent, the person has the intention of returning. At a given time, a person may have only one domicile. And that is absolutely true. The traditional way you take a look at domicile is trying to figure out the intention. And so you can look at certain things if you're a prosecutor or a defense attorney. For instance, where are they registered to vote? That's one thing. But of course, if somebody's registered to vote where they don't live, the other things you're going to look at are, where is their vehicle registered? Where do they get their utility bills? Where do their children live if they have children? Where do their children go to school? Where does their spouse live? Ordinarily, I mean, it is possible for two spouses to have separate domiciles. It's just unusual. So it's a fact that one can consider and that jurors can consider. And in that case I was telling you about from the 80s, the fact that the children went to the Shandon school, the spouse lived in the Shandon home, the cars were all registered in Shandon, and the only thing that was in the Harbor District was this mobile home that had been hauled onto a rented vacant lot. And the statement, of course, that the meetings are going too long, I can't drive all the way home. at 1 and 2 in the morning were the kinds of evidence that allowed the jury to decide that the domicile was in Chandon.
And what was his penalty, do you remember?
Well, we had a, as I said, we had a district attorney at the time who didn't think that was very important, which is why he wasn't going to prosecute it. And the judge who sentenced him, I was kind of surprised because I thought this was a basic U.S. constitutional system where it's important to have elected people from our neighborhoods representing us. He chewed out the deputy DEA for prosecuting the case, and he gave this guy, probation, and he had to go pick up garbage for a while. But he had resigned, and it may be that his resignation caused the judge to give him a lighter sentence. According to the statute as I read it, the DA decided it was a wobbler. So that would have been a misdemeanor. A year, in those days, that was a year in jail maximum.
And I know of cases. I there are a lot of cases where if someone, especially money-wise.
Yeah.
So let's say you're a thief and you've made a bunch of PayPal accounts and you're working for a government body and you have all these PayPal business accounts, fake ones, and you're running a bunch of fake meetings.
I'm trying to remember which one of your stories we're talking about now.
Well, this is something coming out in the next week or two. This person hasn't been arrested yet.
Okay.
But this is going to be coming down. But they work for a government body, and they were planning parties and stuff that weren't actually happening.
I know the folks at the Tribune are listening to
Yeah, and I'm not going to say what group this is. Mm-hmm. Planning, for example, huge catering events, and they weren't real. And so it sold about a quarter of $1 million from a government body. They've admitted they've done it, mm-hmm. and the thing is, if you pay it back, if you have the money and you pay it back before sentencing, and again, this person hasn't, they've been interviewed, they haven't been arrested yet. I know the people, they expect to be arrested soon. But if you pay it back and they have a relative that's going to give them the quarter of a million, they're going to give it back to the government body, you get a way lower sentence. If you don't pay it back, you get a ton of time in jail.
You know, it's right in the good book. If you have sinned, but you bring back to the folks you've stolen from, you won't get as bad a punishment.
And I've noticed it's way lower punishments. I mean, they sometimes it's a month in jail and that's it.
Sure. Well, but then there's probation. And, when I was out in private practice, I remember taking a young man in for his sentencing. He'd gotten convicted, but, we'd had a thorough study and the judge was ready to give him, he gave him 5 years in prison. And he said, but Mr. Jenkins seems to think you have potential to be redeemed. So I'm putting you on 5 years probation. But if you do anything to violate the law and you're back in front of me, you're going to serve out every day.
Yes.
That young man turned his life around.
And I do think, sometimes they do.
He had also done things to provide the people he had hurt with some remedies.
And I do think it's good also when you admit what you've done.
Yeah.
When you say, yes, I did this and I should not have done this.
Yeah.
But I also think when you've spent 5 years and sold a quarter of $1 million, I'm wondering if a slap on the wrist, and again, this was elaborate. There were many, many PayPal businesses.
You know, the prosecutor is going to have to decide if they figure they get the money back for the public agency, do they really want to spend money putting this person in prison, but instead have the probation office check up on them and make sure they're not doing other bad things.
And Stu, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today. It was great. I haven't seen you in person in a while. It was very nice seeing you today.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL was brought to you by Lint Patrol, specializing in dryer vent cleaning. Don't overwork your dryer or let your vent start a fire. Contact Dylan at lintpatrolca.com or call 805-975-5176.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2 o'clock.